Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Red Men Weekly podcast. I'm Steve Hall, delighted to bring you some of the best clips from our Red Men Plus content of the last week. Yes, if you want even more Red Men content in your lives, both in video and podcast forms, Red Men Plus is the place to go, and we're going to give you a little flavour of the types of content that you can get over there during today's show. I'm going to start off with the Biased Football Podcast, a show that lets us have a little chat about everything non-Liverpool related. We cover Liverpool every single angle, of course, do, but it's nice to have a little look elsewhere as well. So yeah, check out Paul, Chris, Dan and Chloe having a good old chat on the Biased Football Podcast.
They were utterly dreadful against Bournemouth. And yeah, Dan, did you see this, by the way? Because me and Chloe discussed this on the drive to the match. The ridiculously quick nature with which they gave the penalty,
for United.
Yeah,
the Adam Smith handball. Yeah, I watched the game. It wasn't the penalty. But Adam Smith didn't complain either. I said this just off air. Adam Smith wasn't that bothered.
Because nobody fucking knows what handball. Like, it hits him on the arm. He knows it hits him on the arm. And he must just go, well, fuck it, I don't know. Fucking lap of the gods.
Yeah.
Spin the roulette wheel and see how the VAR feels this week.
No, it was never a pen. Never. But I do, on the flip side of that, I do think Bournemouth would deny the penalty later on as well. It was given initially by the on-field ref, and they overturned it based on the fact that it was conceived to be outside the area, but not for me. It's a nailed-on one, and I don't understand it personally. But as you say, United were crap. Absolutely crap. And how... I said, again, off-air before we went live, Ten Hag's a dead man walking to me. Like, that is done. His race is run there. They have no idea what's going on. Bruno Fernandes is up to his usual fucking antics again, just kicking off, moaning at absolutely everyone. Shambles of a football team.
That's the lowest points total they've ever had at this time of the season.
Is it possible? Because, like, it was the best start they'd ever had since Ferguson, wasn't it? Not that long ago.
I keep getting told that his win percentage is as high as Fergie's
I don't know, man.
Crap.
I mean, the thing is, Ferguson didn't win as many games as like a Guardiola does. That is one of the things.
That's
Guardiola's
true.
Ridiculous in that, and Klopp as well. In that regard, there would be a lot more draws and stuff involved.
The points
in the teams then
needed
as well
to win stuff, wasn't
that.
Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So I can believe that, like, but I don't know if it's as bad a start. It's not really the start anymore, is it? It's near the end. But it's great that they're there, and I like the fact that they've got that record. It's fantastic. Ten Hag is going at the end of the year.
They've stormed
out, didn't he, of his press conference? Sorry.
Don't see the gone
after things. Him liking the...
They're liking the tweets, Mark Goldbridge's tweets. No one's seen this.
No.
So Goldbridge basically came out and said, Ten Hag shouldn't have thrown him under the bus and all this. And Garnacho was liking all of those tweets. It was its turn.
But it was just... I mean, Goldbridge is very good at doing this, of just hitting the most obvious fucking points and making them out like they're like heroic takes on stuff. Garnacho was knackered. And he's played loads of football. And that fed into this idea. And again, I don't care. People can slaughter Eric Ten Hag all they want. And by all means, Man United are always going to put the players before the manager. That's just how they do things. But there was nothing wrong with taking Garnacho off. He was blowing. He was done. But like, to then make it like this, like it was because he was somehow punishing Garnacho or whatever. I'm not sure that's true. But fucking hilarious that's now led to more destabilisation.
Yeah, it's not good.
I thought he mentioned Garnacho in his presser.
I think
that
he might
was
have
why.
Been, he might have
I don't think it was from the substitution. It was from what he'd said in his presser after the game something.
Yeah, well, good. More of that. Well, he walked
and he out of it as well.
He walked out of the end because
he
was asked the question about it being on for the United's worst ever Premier League finish.
Yeah,
and he basically refused to answer the question. And
he did say something, didn't he? I'm not going to answer that now. But I thought it was a perfectly valid question. To be honest with you, the sort of most normal question ever.
Yeah, but Dan, he's been on his trust the process, don't interrupt the process, like thing. And they've just considered... there's obviously a level of self-belief that he possesses that, like, he must... He, it must be like he's, you know, like with an aeroplane, it's coming down, and you look at the cliffs or the rocks below, and he's like, while this plane is technically still in the air, there's every chance that I'm going to get this up in time. And the problem with the good ownership is they've got to recognise what moment is it recoverable or whatever, and he just... Yeah, I don't know whether he just thinks it's got to get worse before it gets better, like when you know, like you give someone like the antidote to something which is formed of the virus itself, yeah. You know, that kind of thing. I don't know. It feels crazy that like he's still puttering along.
At this point in the season, though, like is it any point making a change, really? I mean, they're going to beat Coventry with Ten Hag in charge, you would imagine. They'll probably inevitably lose to City or Chelsea, to be honest with you, in the final, either way. So
don't beat Coventry.
That's the thing. What if they win the FA Cup and he saves his job? I'm not even sure he should at this point. And I hope he does, obviously.
I don't think a cup saves
for humour's sake. But you don't. You think he goes anyway? Yeah, I honestly do as well. Having watched a decent amount of the meeting, obviously against us twice in quick succession, albeit we end up on the wrong side of both of those results, they are laughably bad at football.
They've got Bruno Fernandes, haven't they? Which helps. You know, I know he's a pain in the arse and he's a whinger and all that, but it goes back to my point about them after our game the other week, is that he's actually really good at football. So they've got that weird thing going for them where they've still got those lads who can dig them out, and he digs them out in this game. But yeah, the whole enterprise is...
As good as he is, I maintain that he is bad news for Manchester United.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really weird to say, given the fact that he's so often the guy who gets them points. But as a captain and as a human being, he's toxic.
Do we think that's a legacy of the Ronaldo thing, by the way? Because I don't remember this being as big a deal prior to Ronaldo coming in. Is there something of like Ronaldo's come in and... Because he had his nose put a bit out of joint, all of a sudden he's not the best player at the football club. Is there something to the way that Ronaldo conducted himself that kind of lets you think this is how the best player at the football club behaves a little bit?
I think he was just always a tit, and you've made him a captain, and it's just increased his level of tittiness.
Well, I think the fact that Ronaldo's there as well probably has sort of played into that, because Fernandes has probably seen the way his compatriot and is also who he believes to be a world class footballer.
His
hero probably as well. Yeah, his captain for his country and all that sort of stuff. He's probably seen the way he's acted and gone, yeah, do you know what? You're right. I'm going to be a bit of the same. So yeah, it probably has had a knock on effect on Fernandes.
Everyone loves a shithouse when they play for you, and everyone loved Ronaldo up until a point. And I think, look, that football club just lets you believe you're bigger than the badge that they wear. And yeah, he's just an absolute idiot.
It's the theatrics, isn't it?
He moans a lot, which Erik ten Hag also does that as well, which I don't suppose that's helping, but... They put you on a pedestal, and he doesn't deserve to be on one that high. And look, he helps them out. He got the two goals against Bournemouth. One of them was an absolute massive slice of luck where it's just deflected right in front of him. The second one's not a penalty, but he has scored the penalty, so fair enough. But yeah, he moans too much. It's like he thinks he's the best footballer potentially in the world at times, and therefore he doesn't have to put as much energy into a game of football, and I've seen that on numerous occasions, and it's not that. If you're captain, you put even more energy into the game than anyone else.
Anyway, good to see. Anyone who's keeping count, that takes Manchester United back down to minus one goal difference.
You can see the 20 shots again.
I reckon they'll get there by the end of the year, you know,
get break even,
yeah.
They definitely can see 20 shots because they play the game.
Yeah.
That's just what they do.
Bournemouth,
it's them, though.
How Bournemouth went like 4-0 up.
Dom Solanke, by the way.
Finish.
Dom Solanke, well, he was boss.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was brilliant.
He's really good. Because obviously we don't really do the England stuff, and obviously don't really pay too much attention to it, but I'd made a point about Dom Solanke because everyone's talking about Ivan Toney and Ollie Watkins. It's like, who's going to go? Do you need both at the Euros? And the answer is probably not. But the only striker in the league who remotely plays like Harry Kane actually plays
is Solanke.
Because he does drop deep and he does link things as well. He's not as good, obviously, but he's having a fantastic season. Yeah, long may it continue for him. Okay, yeah, anyway.
Joe was saying off camera, he thinks he's like Jaden Dance.
What? Right, top four race then. Spurs got absolutely battered by Newcastle. Mad. I said last week the top four race, and I know it's, you know, it still remains possible that both of them could end up, both Villa and Spurs could end up in the Champions League places because of the coefficients and stuff, but I almost kind of don't want it to be the case because it's both of those teams are so entertaining. Like, what are Spurs doing going to Newcastle and getting beaten 4-0? And like, it's no understatement to say they got battered by Newcastle.
Yeah, they did. And they just, you've said it, we've said it on the shows for years, the top four race is just balmy, isn't it? It's like that cheese wheel racing thing, isn't it? It's just mad shit happens throughout the course of it.
People like chasing Cornwall wheel cheese.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, have you
I'm,
seen
I'm
it?
I'm onto it, yeah.
You have to watch it, like, it's brilliant.
Just roll big cheeses down a hill
and chase after them.
It's wild, though. So you think you're in the lead for ages and then you just fall over.
Big fucking cheddar comes past you. That's the end of that.
And that's the race for the top four, mate. Yeah. Yep. You think you're in the lead and then all of a sudden something stupid happens, a cheddar rolls past you and you concede four away at Newcastle.
The funniest thing about this, and it kind of leads into Liverpool to some extent. I was talking to we went to the Atalanta game. I was talking to my sister about it, and how like, by this stage of the season, you've got a measure of what your football team is and what every football team kind of is. You know, you always go into this thing when you're chasing fourth of, we can just put like five wins back to back.
They can't. That's why they're chasing fourth.
Yeah. Well, did you hear the stat on Match of the Day? Bournemouth have never won four consecutive top flight games. Like, never. Like, that would have been a fourth consecutive.
Oh, would it, yeah.
So it's not that surprising.
I can believe that.
But, like, when you think about it, like, you know, it's only four wins. It's only four wins. But by the by on this, it's like, this is the thing about Tottenham and Villa. They're really, really good. But there's a reason why they're fighting for fourth and not fighting for the title, or not scrapping out for the Conference League places instead. They're just every like third week, they just have a mad result where you go, eh? Mm. How does that make sense? But this is mad. I mean, Newcastle obviously like takes them above Man United at the moment. They're back into the conversation for European football again all of a sudden. Feels like they've managed to get the feet back under them all of a sudden, Dan.
Yeah.
Chris's favourite player in the world, Alexander Isak, is scoring goals for fun. Mm. They've still got a couple of injury issues, but yeah, I mean, Harvey Barnes coming back, like, it looks like they're in a good space.
Yeah, do you know what? I've got to give massive credit to Eddie Howe, actually, because honestly, I do. Because
just scroll down the agenda there.
Yeah, no, as I was saying the words,
where is it?
What you were about to say was very much in the forefront of my mind.
Yeah,
they don't make it past
the
Christmas.
Season predictions.
Oh, I thought they'd get sacked before Christmas.
Yeah,
him and Tindall. Because I thought they'd have a disastrous Champions League. In a way, what I said has kind of come to fruition, just that bit didn't. Because I thought they'd have a disastrous Champions League campaign, given the group they were in. And I thought the league wouldn't quite be going to plan either because of the Champions League. And therefore, they get the bullet. They've
stuck
by
them, though,
and he's done a brilliant job because they've regained their poise and he's got them back on track for probably getting the European place of some description. It probably won't be Champions League, obviously, unless they do manage to get into fifth. Can't see it. Europa League, Europa Conference League, whatever it looks like. In terms of sort of trajectory and schedule, that feels about right for Newcastle. Last year was clearly ahead of schedule in terms of getting into Champions League, probably a year too soon. Yeah, well, yeah, of course, and Chelsea to a certain extent as well. But if they do get Europa League, let's just say for argument's sake right now, that's really impressive, especially considering the amount of injuries they've had, competing with the Champions League as well earlier on. Like, massive credit to him, and I doubted his credentials, not in terms of being a good footy manager, because I think he is, but when it gets to sort of the elite level and the upper echelons, I wasn't so sure. I might be wrong.
I did enjoy Jason Tindall nearly shaking Ange Postecoglou's hand first and having to go, no, shake his hand first. Yeah, it's mad how that's gone from being a meme to like being a thing that they actually now have to think about.
Subconsciously thinking about it.
Wild. Cheers to Paul and the guys on that one. Next up, it's Journo Inside Time. Yes, Neil Jones, Liverpool journalist, spoke to Dan Clubb this week about Liverpool's managerial prospects. What is happening in the future? Who's it going to be? So yeah, check out what Dan and Neil had to say.
Oh, here we go. There's a lot going on in the manager circle, let's put it that way. A few notes before we get into the main topic. Now, to begin with, our guy Pedro Sepulveda has been speaking about Ruben Amorim. He said yesterday, he's the only name on Liverpool's table to be the next coach. All the others are fake news, he actually used that term. And an aim to divert the attention from negotiations taking place with Amorim's agent. Still no contact with Sporting. Obviously, Ruben Amorim came out recently and said, stop talking about me. I am the Sporting manager. Leave it at that. Julian Nagelsmann looks like he's destined to return to Bayern Munich, which is interesting. Obviously, one of the names who's been in and around the frame for the Liverpool job. David Ornstein has spoken last night. It was, he said, Roberto De Zerbi still probably not going to be the one who'll be getting the job. He is not of the profile we're looking for. Amorim's been heavily linked, but his understanding is, despite he's a candidate, he's not a shoo-in for the job, and he's not necessarily the top option either. He did go on to say Liverpool looking at a number of options. They're finalising their work on them and will not be afraid to be brave and think outside the obvious candidates. Now, that takes us to Niko Kovac, in my opinion. Now, I've said this sort of flippantly in conversation, not even on shows necessarily in the past week, but, and we kind of touched on it last week in a way as well, Neil, like, this manager search now, it does feel a little bit reminiscent of our midfielder DM search in particular. Yeah. Because it was Moises Caicedo, it was Romeo Lavia, and all of a sudden it wasn't, and it was Vitorio Endo. Yeah. Like, if it's not Xabi Alonso, Julian Nagelsmann, Ruben Amorim, and this is no disrespect to whoever the guy could well be, but it does feel a little bit Vitorio Endo-esque in that it's going to be a bit of a surprise potentially.
Yeah, I suppose if it's not Amorim, yeah, it will be, won't it? And Amorim is a risk anyway, but I think it will be Amorim personally. But you're right, if you take him, if you scratched him off the list and said, right, where are we going now, you go, okay, that's a lot of unknowns in there. You know, I don't know if you can, you get the betting odds up, or who would be,
I find them
who,
now, yeah, talking,
who will, yeah, who will be on there? Because I was trying to think that, you know, you might have, I think De Zerbi will probably still be in there, yeah, somewhere, but
despite the fact it doesn't look like,
yeah,
it,
you'll
it
have possibly Unai Emery,
yeah,
in possibly, there, yeah. And you know, you've got, you know, I'm trying to think, Steven Gerrard would probably be on the list somewhere along the lines, and that would be obviously a big, okay, surprise.
Yeah, so Amorim off the top of the betting, Roberto De Zerbi, Julian Nagelsmann, Thiago Motta, but he looks Juventus bound last I heard. Yeah. Thomas Tuchel not far behind, Gary O'Neill, Unai Emery as you mentioned, yeah, Luis Enrique, Roger Schmidt, Zinedine Zidane, Graham Potter, Marco Rose, Marco Silva, Lopetegui.
Zinedine Zidane and Graham Potter in next to
the way. I mean, Xabi Alonso's, you know, midway in the list, and we know it's not going to be him. Yeah. Enzo Maresca's struggling. I mean, I'm surprised Thomas Frank's that low, I'll be really honest.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think Thomas Frank ticks a few boxes in terms of, I think he connects with supporters and energises them. I think that would be one. Obviously, yeah, he's done a good job in limited circumstances with Brentford. Premier League proven. I think style of play possibly would be one that you question, maybe. Just the level, just the sheer level of stepping up from the bottom of the Premier League or the bottom half of the Premier League to the top half. But I do like him. I think he's a really good character. Mm. He's just someone I like as a person. You know, sort of want him to do well. In a lot of Premier League managers can come across poorly, I think, and I think he never really does. So not to me anyway. Yeah, possibly. I mean, I'd be interested to know what fans would think of Emery as a manager, because I watched the second half of that. Well, I watched the whole game of that Arsenal game. But if you can get Aston Villa playing that way, you know, and listen, Aston Villa aren't a small club by any means, and they're not on a small budget, but they're overachieving where they are at this moment in time. But they're also overachieving in terms of the performance levels that they're producing. You know, he's some coach. He is some coach and, yeah, some manager. You know, his track record, Arsenal might colour it to a few people, but he still got them to a European final. If you talk about pedigree and sort of, you know, what have you got in your back pocket, sort, yeah, of there, he's as well sort of stocked as anyone really in there. But is it a perception thing? Is it an age thing, or just a communication thing maybe that would suffer? But he's a manager that, I think he's a brilliant manager. I know we talked last week about, yeah, you had Guillaume Balague on, and he was talking about Valverde, mm-hmm, and maybe being underappreciated and not touted for jobs. Yeah. I think Emery's another one of those. I think, you know, the fact that he's come to the Premier League and done what he did. I mean, he did it at Sevilla, he did it at Villarreal, yeah, obviously, before that. Success seems to follow, or progress certainly seems
certainly
to follow.
In Europe, anyway,
yeah, yeah, absolutely. But you know, you're doing it in the Premier League, yeah, now. Yeah. They're in a very good position now, aren't they, to qualify for the Champions League as Aston Villa manager. And it's funny, isn't it, that you think Steven Gerrard was obviously in that position maybe 2 years ago, and you were thinking, right, if he just does, and but you would never have dreamt that Steven Gerrard would get Aston Villa into the Champions League. You'd have said if Steven Gerrard kept Aston Villa sort of eighth, ninth in the league, you'd go, well, he's a shoo-in for the Liverpool job when Klopp leaves. Unai Emery's fourth in the league with Aston Villa, you know, like, so...
Should he be higher on the list?
Should he be? You know, I'm listening, he might be difficult to get out of them, you know, but he is one. I think Inzaghi, I've mentioned on the shows in the past, that you think, well, I'm looking at sort of what he's achieved, and you think... That's another one that really, I'm surprised he doesn't get sort of touted for more jobs. I personally think it will be Amorim.
Yeah.
But like I say, you move out of that. If you were to tick him off, if he was to come out and do an Alonso and say, I'm having one more year, you know, sorry, then you are starting to get into the realm of, okay, this is going to be interesting. You know, this is going to be a sort of a real...
left field
or risky appointment. I don't think Kovac, you know, to move on to Niko Kovac, I don't see that as being a realistic prospect. He's, you know, someone who's he's not been popular, I think, in terms of, you know, when he's done it, you know, even if he won a double at Bayern Munich, but he was already seen as someone who, he's not for them, really. You know, I think he was moved out. I think the story said something like his agent has been sounding out Premier League clubs, and you think, well, yeah, that makes more sense than, you know, Liverpool putting that name out there. I think it's more likely to come from that. But I think we'll have to wait and see. But I would expect Amorim to stay top of the agenda. And you know, they had obviously another good weekend, didn't they? They won Friday, kept that gap up to Benfica. What are they two wins away from winning the league?
I think play tonight as well.
Yeah, and they've got a cup final obviously on the horizon as well. I thought his press conference was good, wasn't it? You know, like, I like the fact that he just said, look, this is the last time we're going to talk about it. And, you know, that's one way to do it, isn't it? But I think I have to take him at his word at this moment in time, but I expect there'll be more developments in that situation.
You would imagine so. And he said the right things, I think, really. You'd want to hear that, wouldn't you, if you were sports
about and his players, you know, you don't... Yeah. You know, okay, they might all accept the gaffer's probably off at the end of the season, but you don't want him coming out and saying, well, you know, you look at the difference with the Zerbi a little bit, you know, what them Brighton players feel when he's coming out and saying, well, you know, I need to have a speak with the owner and, you know, they need to match my ambitions and blah, blah, blah. It does lend itself to a little bit of sort of,
you're not fully invested.
You're not here for us. Yeah. You know, like maybe we've had conversations where you've told me that you're, you know, come on, you come and join Brighton because I'm here for the long run and I want you to be part of it. And now you're sort of saying you might jump ship, you know. And maybe it just also gives the impression that all's not well at the club if you're doing stuff like that. So at least Amorim, I think he was more than fair to do it. And I actually think it's probably it's a feather in his cap a little bit from a Liverpool point of view that he's conducting himself in that manner.
Yeah, I agree with you. And also, if you haven't seen the clip of him shouting at Pepe at Porto, then where have you been? Because that's been doing the rounds. And it's nice to see, isn't it? And I will just draw light.
Everyone shouts at Pepe. He's the ultimate wind-up.
I'm here for it. There's three names in here. Fernandez Torres at 40-1, Steven Gerrard at 40-1, and Abel Xavier at 40-1 as well. So,
there you go, another three.
Wow.
What's Abel Xavier? You know what? I have to admit, I don't know what Abel Xavier does these days.
He is going down the coaching route, and I'm pretty 99.9% certain he did his coaching badges with Ruben Amorim over in Belfast a couple of years ago.
No, like, I mean, that's maybe Gerrard's 2 years too late, Torres is 2 years too early, you know, the timing is an interesting thing, isn't it? You know, again, I am a little bit surprised that we haven't seen Steven being positioning himself a little bit and sort of saying, well, you know, don't forget about me, you know, okay, you can accept I had a bad time at Villa and I went to Saudi Arabia and it's a little bit out of sight to the mainstream, but I, you know, don't forget, Jürgen anointed him, You know, I think he basically said he will be the next Liverpool manager, or he will be a future Liverpool manager. So I am a little bit surprised that there's been no talk really about him in there, and even from his side. You know, I don't know if he's been asked. I'd be surprised if he hasn't. You know, people wouldn't be doing the job, I don't think, if someone hadn't said to him at one of his team's games, would you be interested? But yeah, you think if this was 18 months ago, 2 years ago, that, you know, every story would have been Steven Gerrard to Liverpool. And I am a little bit surprised at that, even if maybe that tells you a little bit about, you know, how quickly things change in management.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, his stock definitely took a massive hit, and maybe it tells you a little bit about where he's at in terms of his managerial career and his ambitions as well. But I make you right on Kovac as well, for it's worth it. I put an agenda there, 2 years, because I feel like he only ever does 2 years anywhere he's at. And all his managerial stints have been pretty much that long, and I'm not sure Liverpool need or want that right now. However, having said that, the idea of a stopgap for a season while we wait for Xabi Alonso has definitely crossed my mind. Whichever way, I'm fine with it. Yeah, he wants a year out.
What's he want to do? He's got to learn to cook, he said to me.
It's taken me 39. Yeah, my missus might disagree with me actually on that.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Cheers to Dan and cheers to Neil for that one. Sticking with Dan this week, it's an expert insight. Dan spoke to Tom Cundett all about, yes, another, of course, rumoured Liverpool manager. It's Ruben Amorim. What's he got to offer? What's on the table? All that kind of stuff. Why not speak to an expert on Portuguese footy? So that's exactly what Dan did.
I noticed following the victory, obviously doubleheader victory over Benfica, you took to Twitter following the league game, and you highlighted one of his key strengths as being how he improved players using the match winner in that instance as an example of that. I mean, just how impressive has it been, the fact he's been able to take relatively unknown or underperforming players or whatever? We've had this Randy Robertson, by the way, it feels like a similar sort of story. How has he done that? And just how often has he done that, I guess, as well?
Yeah, well, I've almost lost count. This is, again, I'd say one of his strongest assets. I think any coach really, Dan, isn't it? If you look at how players perform under that manager and then look at how they perform under other managers. And I think that's a key kind of metric of how impressive a coach is. And there's no doubt about it, you know, Amorim manages to get the best out of his players and the best out of, I'd say, older players and players who you really wouldn't expect him to improve. And I'll give you an example here, who you'll know well, and Liverpool fans will know well, is the captain, Sebastian Coates, who's become, you know, an absolute cult hero legend here at Sporting. I think it's coming up to his 10th season. And, you know, he's big tall centre-back, as you know, good, decent player, but you wouldn't really say top-class player, quite mistake-prone he was at Sporting. And, you know, I think even Sporting fans, you know they love Kouats because it's the sort of player gives everything, but they realised maybe he wasn't top-class. Since Amorim came in, you know, changed the system to three at the back, it's just suited him completely down to the ground. Kouats, you know, it kind of, his lack of pace is what was exposed when he was just in a partnership in two-man defence. But with a three-man defence, his colleagues cover for him, and he has been absolutely superb. Monumental display on the weekend, by the way. He's probably man of the match, although that, of course, went to the two-goal hero, Jenny Katama. So that's an example of an older player, but really, if it's his youngest, you know, younger players, he's just improved them. And again, we can look at examples who your listeners will know well. In England, players like Joel Polinia, he kind of bounced around from club to club. He'd been loaned out a few times. When Amorim got hold of him, you know, he realised just what a brilliant player he was. And he improved him, improved his positioning, improved his disciplinary record, just made him into an, you know, absolute beast of a defensive midfielder. He's now Portugal's, you know, starting defensive midfielder. Pedro Porro, another one who you'll know, of course, he came from Man City, hadn't got a look in there. You could see that there was talent there, but he was very much a rough diamond, especially defensive side of his game, which some people might look at it still and say he's not the perfect right back, but going forward, he's just such an asset to the team and perfect again for Amorim's system. You know, I think he cost 10 million from Manchester City, sold for 40 million or over 40 million to Tottenham Hotspur. Matheus Nunes, another player, came, I think it cost about 250,000, sold for 30 million to Wolves in the end. You know, you can just go on and on. There's so many players like that, especially with the young players. He is able to mould them. Again, I think the way he communicates and the way he kind of, I could say, gets into the head of players, he seems to have exactly the right words to make sure they keep progressing. For example, just mentioned it a couple of times at the weekend, Jenny Katamu, who was is the Sporting right back now, but he was playing for Marítimo last season on loan. Marítimo got relegated. He hardly got a look in, hardly got a game. Before that, he'd been on loan at another club, Vitória de Guimarães. Again, didn't get much playing time. Came to Sporting, or returned to Sporting, and you know, people thought he'd probably just be sold, and it's the last we'd heard of him. Amorim really believed in him. He started playing him more and more this season. He's just got better and better and better. An absolutely sensational performance at the weekend. Two goals. The winning goal was just unbelievable, you know, in stoppage time. But, you know, not just... And at the end of the game, what did Amorim do? What did he say? He said, yeah, obviously, we're all really pleased for Jenny. You know, a very popular member of the squad. But I have to be perfectly honest, I don't think he played a very good game today. Keeping his feet completely on the ground. You know, it reminds me of those stories you hear about Alex Ferguson and even going back, Bill Shankly or something, when a player's kind of, you know, really flying and everything. First thing they do is, you know, bring them back to earth with a bump to make sure they keep. So, yeah, he's just, you know, and this is even before we talk about kind of tactically and his actual coaching and technically the way he improves players. And, you know, it's just... A lot of those players, night and day, like I say, you can almost lose count of them. There's so many of these old players is absolutely improved. Of course, it's an interesting situation because at Liverpool, on the one hand, he'll have, you know, players who don't need improving. You know, some of the best players in the world, Salah, Van Dijk, Alisson, whatever. But then, of course, we've all seen this season, Liverpool have got a lot of young players coming up, haven't they? And, you know, starting to make an impression on the first team. So in that respect, I think that Amorim could be the perfect coach to try and develop them, you know, and keep them travelling in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the plan and certainly the hope. As you say, they have been a revelation, really. I mean, it's been needs must a little bit at times for Liverpool in terms of the youngsters. Yeah. But as you said, they've been thrust into the limelight and they've swam rather than sank, let's put it that way. And again, having a manager that can
can continue to show that faith in them and continue to improve them is a very big tick in the box for Liverpool fans. There's no two ways about that.
I think that's the key thing there. You say, Dan, faith, you know, having faith in them, showing faith in them. He's not afraid to throw in these players at Sporting, even though they had very little or no experience at all, really. You know, I remember there's also a famous incident in his first season when Sporting were, you know, going really well, but it was ready towards maybe 10 games to go. So it's getting at that quite nervy stage of the season. You know, could Sporting see it out? And there was a game against Vitória de Guimarães, who are one of the best teams here in Sporting outside the top three. Sporting were winning 1-0. I think there was about 10 minutes, 15 minutes to go. An injury to one of the Sporting players. What does Amorim do? He throws in a 16-year-old Dari Asubu to make his debut. And a 16-year-old who had turned 16 1 week before, I think he became the youngest ever player. People were saying, what's he doing? You know, this is crazy. This is, you know, Sporting concede here. Now, it could really derail their title charge. But, you know, again, he did well in his 10, 15 minutes, the player in question. And, you know, that kind of, you know, set him up. And I think that almost sent a message, maybe not that, you know, maybe it wasn't so important at that exact time for that particular player. But what was important is that it sent a message. Amorim sent a message, you know, we're not afraid to put faith in our young players and to give them a chance. And if you keep working hard, you know, you'll get your opportunity.
Yeah, and that knock-on effect it has, not only on the player in question, but also those beneath in the academy and stuff like that, to know, as you say.
Absolutely.
Yeah, to know if I get to a level, if I'm good, if I work hard enough, the manager will trust me and I'll get my shot. And yeah, that must be really incredible for youngsters, to be honest. I wanted to ask you, sort of spinning off on the coaching stuff as well, because often at times Jurgen Klopp during his time at Liverpool has been at pains to stress it's not just all about him, and he's often sort of praised the people around him. Pep Linders being amongst them, of course, and obviously every time we've won anything, basically it's been about, oh, listen, thanks to so-and-so. Ruben Amorim feels like he's cut from the same cloth in that. I remember I've seen a picture of a press conference he held with his entire coaching staff at one point, which again speaks to the fact it's a collective effort. Is that very much what he's like? And I understand he's got quite a strong, excellent working relationship with Carlos Fernandez, his assistant. Do you envisage he will come with him, or he'd at least want to bring his people with him as well?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, without a doubt. I think it'd be a contract. They consider themselves a team, without a doubt. And yeah, that press conference you alluded to there was the match when Sporting clinched the title. I think it was against Boavista. It's about three games from the end of his first season. And yeah, I was at that press conference and it was, you know, it was really good to see, because again, that just speaks volumes to what Amorim is like, because yeah, he made a point, exactly him in the middle. Then I think there were six, weren't they? Three on his right, three on his left. And he said, look, this isn't just Amorim who's won this title. This is all of us. We've all contributed in one way or the other. And yeah, absolutely, no doubt about it. He, for instance, he talks a lot about set pieces. Whenever Sporting score a goal from a set piece, he says, okay, you've got to give the credit to coaching staff here, because it's not me who works on the set pieces. You know, I delegate that. So yeah, absolutely, it's a team effort. And I'm pretty sure that he'll insist that, you know, if he comes to Liverpool, he brings all his team with him.
Right then, next up, it is the final word show. Yes, Liverpool won in Atalanta 1-0, but unfortunately it wasn't enough to get them through to the semi-finals of the Europa League. To discuss the game, the fallout, and what went right and what went wrong, I had Lewis and Peter in the studio to, pick the bones out of what was another frustrating night for Liverpool. In the second half, there was no space for Liverpool to exploit. Alexander-Arnold tried one very early to Robertson that just went, and every time we tried long, in the end it was going through to the goalie because they were onto it. And we're going to speak about Liverpool in a moment and the lethargic nature of the second half, but I do think, you know, this is, I reckon, both halves at Anfield and second half in Bergamo, Gasperini's got the better of us there, and their players. Our game plan was fantastic for the half and they switched it up straight away, and in the second half was a complete non-event, and that some of it will be down to us, which we'll speak about, but also to them. They killed that game. They shut the game off. There was no space in behind. There was no passing lanes, and Liverpool were trying to stick jelly in a doorknob. You know, you know what I mean? Like, there was just nothing you could do.
No, absolutely. And I feel like it was very much, if plan A doesn't work, there's no plan B. So this is the only way we can beat them.
Plan B was the subs. It wasn't a change, real change of anything. Yeah.
It was just change the players. There was, don't change the system. And like I said, we saw that. I keep mentioning it, but we saw that in the second half. The amount Alisson had the ball in the hopes that someone's going to come onto him.
I've got a
staff
for you. Sorry to interrupt you, but I have got a staff for you on Alisson. Let me just make sure I get this completely correct. Alisson had 82 completed passes in the game, which is more than any goalkeeper's ever had in a Europa League or Champions League game. And a lot of those were to Ibu Konate, Virgil van Dijk or Alexis McAllister, 4 yards. Like, there was times when Alisson was playing centre mid and there was just nowhere to go. They weren't pressing him.
No.
I understand, Lewis, to go back to you, the give it to your goalie, hope they come onto him and then play round them. When they stopped coming on to Alisson, Liverpool like felt like, oh shit, now what? Like, it was like the computer malfunctions. Now what do we do? It felt like really, really difficult for them.
That's what I mean. There was no other option, and I just, it took us until, oh god, what, like the 75th, maybe the 80th minute for us to go, right, this isn't working. It should have, realistically, try it in the second half for about 5-10 minutes, maybe a little bit longer, but if it's not working, just change it. I know they didn't give us a lot of options. Every time we tried to go through the middle, there was 2 or 3 players there. There was no one up front was able to get in behind. The keeper was doing really well, but you've got to try something else. Even if it's just give the ball to Trent to try and get those balls over the top, just to catch them off maybe once or twice. Like, I can't explain. It was one of the few times where I've looked at a Jurgen Klopp team, and not to be too down about it because it's not the end of the world, but I've looked at it and thought, we haven't a clue here. We just don't know what to do with this team, and tactically they got the better of us.
There was one point I saw on the sidelines, because he makes the subs, he makes a couple changes and stuff as well, and we'll talk about like Jurgen going 4-4-2, so he's obviously he's obviously aware of it. But Liverpool's big problem is that they couldn't get in their half, and when they did, it was the long ball. It was a bit of percentage play. I don't know. What do you think they could have done differently? Because they don't really have... Not Liverpool on a long ball team, really. I mean, Nunes is all right in the air and Gakpo's okay in the air, but they're not a team who are just going to lump it forward and play for second balls. I think Atalanta would quite prefer for Liverpool to be doing that.
Yeah.
I don't know. But they feel like they ran out of ideas. I don't know. As you were sat watching, thinking, what's missing here? What could we be doing?
Yeah, well, I think, as you say, you either want a big man up top who can chest it down, hold 2 men off and play it to a midfielder who's
James
running
Dan's
through.
Maybe.
Yeah, well, or Nunes and Gakpo. I know it's not their game, but they're tall enough and big enough to be able to mix it up for 20 minutes of one match where we have to go a bit direct. It's all man-to-man marking, so you've just got to beat a man. I think that's what no one tried. I wouldn't have minded. I probably wouldn't have wanted Konate to be doing it, but maybe McAllister, if he just tries to beat their attacking mid, because, yeah, he might lose it. I still back that we probably got enough back to get the ball back off them. But if you beat a man, you beat the whole man marking, because then someone comes out, another player's free. But we just kept trying to make them come to us, where I think we had to take the game to them. And there was that massive space in the middle, wasn't there? I think Elliot and Jones had pushed up.
Yeah,
and
Jones did it great.
There was nothing in the middle, though. Like all we could do was chip a ball into Jota or Nunes' chest, and then their defender just came right to the back of them, either a cynical foul or they just outstrengthed them, got the ball back, and then they pretty much gave it back to us. And it was just rinse and repeat, wasn't it? And I think Klopp's praised players before for changing their own tactics in the middle of a game, and either, which we didn't do enough. I know you said 75th minute, but still in the 92nd minute, we were still passing it around the back. I've never screamed at a telly that much watching us play, because it just takes, just try something, just do anything. I honestly don't mind if it goes 1-1 and the game's over, at least you've tried something. But yeah, kick it long, beat a man, try. It just felt like it was frustrating as anything.
Do you think they were really worried, Lewis, about the counter attack? Because that's when Atalanta scored in Liverpool get the ball away and they got punished. And listen, they nearly did it a couple of times here. And got an offside, a correct offside flag and a couple of near misses here where they did try something they were almost caught by it. It felt like they were that scared of what a goal for them kills this, that they were almost caught between a rock and a hard place. Like, when it gets like 85 minutes, then there's no excuse, I understand. Yeah. But like between like 45 to 70, you're probably thinking, we just can't afford to take any massive, massive risk here, because as soon as they scored, it's game over. It felt a little bit like that to me.
Yeah, definitely. But like, asking, just to throw back a question back to you though, would you rather us do what we did then, or like Klopp said, fail beautifully? Like, rather have a go, and yeah, we're going to leave space in behind, but if we're going out anyway, I would rather see us die on our sword.
I see the logic in both. I see the logic in getting to 70 and then going, listen, this isn't working now. If they scored, the game was done. So yeah, I understand Liverpool being a little bit cautious, but I think Peter hit the nail on the head before to give my, I mean, I'm the host, but I'll give my opinion. The inability for Liverpool to have a player who dribbles past the man killed them. Because that's how you beat Man Marking. When Bielsa used to do it to us, the key was give it to someone and they let them beat their player and then all hell breaks loose, or it should break loose. Liverpool didn't really have anyone. I mean, Jones didn't really try.
He tried,
at least he gave it a go, but was unsuccessful doing it. So Bosley's best moments came when he was in space rather than up against the man. Diaz got doubled up on a little bit. Salah doesn't do a pass people anymore. That's just gone out of his game. I actually thought, and I know people might slate me for this, I actually thought Ryan Gravenberch would have been a good option in that game, because he does try that.
Physical.
It, listen, it pisses me off in the Premier League sometimes when we're on the edge of their box and he just tries to skip around someone and gives it away. I think that game was crying out for somebody. You had to be able to beat a player, because the second you beat a player in my marking system, it goes to someone's in space. Liverpool didn't have that all game, and in the end, I've never seen Alisson with the ball at his feet in the middle of two centre halves. Yeah. Just stood still, and he's shouting, working a pass. It wasn't his fault. He was like, "What do I do?" And then he'd have to kick it. He'd lose it. It was infuriating.
Like you said, we were stuck between a rock and a hard place. It was either commit too many from them forward and. You've seen us this season. We can't defend for anything at points. But I just, like you said, I get the logic up until the 75th minute. At that point, just think, fuck it, like, just go for it.
You know what didn't help, though, Pierre, when it comes to that? It's like, there's obviously players with injuries. Like, Trent was Liverpool's best option, I think, of getting anything else of that game. And he was knackered by it. You could tell. There was a moment, like, 5 minutes before he went off, a couple of minutes where he just looked shattered. Because I don't think Liverpool would have wanted to take Alexander-Arnold off. He's coming back from injury. They probably had to. But also, Nunes was a bit rubbish when he come on. Jota was worse when he come on. He's clearly struggling. He's got no rhythm, and we've often seen this with Jota. He takes a little bit of time to come back into it.
Yeah.
So the options that Jürgen's looking to his bench, he's probably said to the lads, "I'm making a triple sub around the hour. Dom, Mo, like, just give it your all. Run, Luis Diaz, and I'll bring these three lads on to replace you." And when those three lads were struggling, the momentum had gone out the game.
Yeah. Well, we've crying out for all these big players to come back, and when we had the kids in and they were legging it about because they weren't playing football that much, that's what we have missed, a bit of energy. Yeah. You bring a Bobby Clark on there, I don't know what he does, but he's going to run up and down that pitch. And what we did so well in the first half, as we've said already, Robertson was up front, Salah's dropping in, and we just seemed to stop trying that as well. I wouldn't have minded just, well, of course it was, because that's what I think Trent said himself at half time. He'd already ran out of juice, and he plays another 20 odd minutes, so we definitely didn't have the energy to keep doing it. And that's why that tactic, as I said before, was high risk, high reward, because we could only do it for so long. It gave them a chance to win the ball back, but it gave us chances, and that's why we were in the game. But if you bring in three players on, just even if it's just Elliot, just come and stand at centre back and then drag that player out, keep moving it, because we just, at the end, as you say, it was Alisson stood still in our formation. I doubt anyone moved about 10 yards for the whole of the last 15 minutes. We just kept in the same shape and kept trying to do the same things that weren't working.
It's why I go back to it, Lewis. I wonder, not getting the second goal in the first half, because if that does happen, then you can, if you want to, you can just go, listen, for 45 minutes now, Alamo, long. You can go long. You can go direct and stuff. You can take the chances. You can let it go, because it felt like Liverpool ran out of steam. But running out of steam at 2-0 is that's all right. You'll take that, and then you can go to the cavalry and go, listen, lads, we don't need you to leg it. We just need a goal.
Yeah.
And that might be difficult, because Pete's right, we haven't been able to score a goal for a while. But the fact that we didn't get that second when we were on top of them and we killed them, we were all over them, and we really should have got it. I think it all can stem back to that. Liverpool run out of gas and run out of ideas. But if it's 2-0, you can stick Virgil van Dijk up front for 10 minutes, or what it is. But at 1-0, it's almost like, what's the fucking point?
Right then, that is today's show all wrapped up. Hope you enjoyed those clips. Like I say, if you want to watch them or listen to them in full, redmenplus.com is the place to go. You can sign up there and get all those available in video and podcast forms. Or if you're a Spotify user and you love using Spotify and you only want to listen to the shows on Spotify, if you search for Red Men Plus Podcasts on your Spotify app, you can sign up directly through Spotify. It doesn't get access to videos or nothing like that, but it will get you the podcasts in podcast form on your Spotify app. So yeah, there's two different ways where you can get all that amazing content. Hope you have a great weekend. Hope Liverpool win on Sunday. And yeah, we'll be back next week with another episode of the weekly podcast. See you all soon.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.